Hi, good morning, Xavier. How are
All
you?
right, I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. So, Xavier, the truth is we haven't known each other for quite a long time. We met, I think, December 2020. Was it December 20 something?
Sounds about right. Sounds about
Yeah.
right. Yeah.
I recall a peppermint chocolate drink, so it should be around Christmas,
Oh,
definitely.
that's right. That's right.
One of our friends introduced each other because we both are passionate about spirituality, and that's what we have in common. And we started discussing, and honestly, I was very impressed by the extensive knowledge you've got across pretty much everything. The amount of books you must have read, it's unbelievable. So I was like, oh my God, there's so much I can learn about him. It's fantastic. So I hope you will share that with us. But what struck me really at the beginning, we tried to understand each other and why we started to be on this spiritual path, why we were conscious of being on this path. And you share this story about how you found yourself in a Buddhist temple, I think. And this was this monk coming towards you. You didn't know him, and he come to you, and was it touch your chest? Was it a chest?
Yeah, I'll give a little bit of context there. Well,
Please.
first of all, thank you for all your kind words. I appreciate that. But I don't see myself as any sort of expert. It's just somebody who, I mean, I just really dove into all of these subjects, and really explored it to try to maybe create a better map for understanding myself, the world, all these types of experiences. And so that's kind of what I've put together is some new maps, I think, is what I've been working on. But I cannot say I'm an expert, so like and if I may say something wrong, definitely that this
No,
that this
that's
might
fine.
happen.
I was the one saying you were an expert, so don't worry about
okay okay okay
it.
good 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 But that being said, so the story, just a little context for that. I got into this idea of meditation, not through any sort of personal development or spiritual reasons, but more because stress relief. I was working quite a lot, very stressed, and I was in my late 20s and and promoted very quickly within a business organization. And to be quite honest, probably way too fast, and I don't know how it happened, and I was not ready for the types of responsibilities I had. So I was very stressed at that time, and I was doing a lot all at once, and I needed a way to calm my nerves. So I started learning different techniques. I learned about mindfulness and breathing, and somehow that led me down a pathway where I learned about a Buddhist group in Miami, Florida, where I lived. And I went to visit, and that's where they had a Tibetan Buddhist lama visit. And this lama, I asked him, I said, sometimes when I sit down, I have a kind of a pressure or in my head, maybe around between my eyes. Should I focus there? Is there something I'm supposed to do? Like this type of thing. And he didn't say a word. He just pointed at, he just put his finger in my chest, in my heart space, and he just like pointed hard, like boom, like really kind of hit it. And I got the message, like I think it no, I think it was like kind of like I think he moved his finger down from my head to the chest, and then he hit kind of pointed. So the point was like, it's not your head. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. And I walked away, So like he didn't even have to say anything. I just got it. And I know there were people looking, and I was actually, when I got home, I was very embarrassed by the whole thing. But it was a very informative moment. And I can look back on that and now better understand it. Even at that time, I was just like, I don't know what he's talking about,
Yes, but now you understand. What's your analysis of it now? With all the information you accumulated since that event, because you were in your late 20s, right? So how do you understand what he's been doing?
I mean, I think his point is the, you know, a key kind of cornerstone to a lot of kind of Eastern, you know, religion and practices, and which is move out of your thinking mind into what they call the heart mind. But generally speaking, the way I understand it best is that it's a metaphor for turning on the body.
Yes.
So we go through most of our lives through our heads. Yeah. And, yes. And by that, it's overly focused on the thoughts that arise in our intellect and behaving according to those thoughts, or having those thoughts kind of drive our behavior, and losing any sort of awareness of the body. So this idea of shifting to the heart mind or heart chakra or the solar plexus, or is this somatic process of turning on the body and bringing awareness to the body as like a, that is the threshold step into expanding what it is to be human.
But it took me a while. I can relate with your story, because it honestly took me a while to understand that I need to feel with my body and to be able to understand the emotion that was going on. And at the very beginning, when I was guided to do that, I was still describing the thoughts I had in my mind related to an event. Like, for example, something happened, I got upset, but I was still explaining it as, well, this is because of that and that. I was talking the story. I felt like almost like I've been programmed all my life to think, but I had no idea to use the other part of who we are. It's much wider than our mind. And especially when we identified with intellectuals, I think it's even worse.
Absolutely. I mean, the amount, I think, and I myself was included in this, the amount of people who go through the day with very little to no awareness of their body. It's almost like floating heads, thoughts. It's robotic. It's a robotic, I think you said program type life. You know, many traditions, I've been working on something just last night. I was writing about this. So you have people like Gurdjieff and who talk about this robotic way of living. And there's a way to expand oneself out of that mode of living and into something new, something probably more fully human.
Yes, but the path to do that is much more difficult than I expected at first place. Because I thought, okay, we definitely need to look inward. So I'm going to look, you know, sit down. And that's when we actually tend to realize that meditation is not to really stress, which I started the same way as you did, because I was very stressed and I needed to relax. So that's fine. I think it's a good way to approach meditation. But I wasn't even meditating. I didn't know at the time that wasn't meditation, because I didn't know what I was supposed to look for in a meditation. I thought that just by sitting down, I was going to meditate. So that's really where I started. And also, when you start to know that you need to be aware of the presence, and we'll talk about your book, but you wrote a wonderful book and you speak about the observer. That's the term you use. And I like it. I like observer or presence or being. And when I became aware of the observer within me and I sat down and I actually become aware of what was inside me, it was a terrible experience. Very awful, I would say.
Yeah.
And that can easily put off a lot of people. You open a box and you're thinking, maybe I should just close it down. Was it the same for your experience?
Yes, I think the cliche of they use this a lot in movies, like you get more than you bargained for, is really true. And I think, you know, one thing that I write about and I talk about is having a skepticism of the way that often these topics are there's no other way to kind of, there's no better way to put it. The way they're sold in the kind of marketplace of ideas in modern society is that they are sold as kind of these happiness tools. And, you know, you're just going to sit down and you see these pictures of people smiling and sitting quietly. And, you know, it's like a brochure, you know. Yes. And it's not that, you know, it's not that at all, actually, because I think that first step is when you first broaden that awareness and start turning on kind of the body and seeing what's kind of going on, really is not really pleasant. And actually, I think that is the core of the book that I wrote. I think is around what is that discomfort.
Yes.
How does one relate to that discomfort that immediately comes up? So to give you the really practical way of understanding this, or an example of this, is when the key question of the book is, what happens when you sit down quietly with no distractions? You just sit down. What happens? And if somebody tells you, well, you know, I have these lovely meditative thoughts and I'm brought into stillness and peace and blah blah blah, to be honest with you, I mean, maybe there are people who experience that, but I think the vast majority of people are not experiencing that. And if someone says that, I am very skeptical. I think what is really more likely to happen is that you feel discomfort in the body, you feel yes. pains, anxiety, you start experiencing racing thoughts, different thoughts suggesting to do different things. Maybe I need to get up, maybe I need to eat, maybe I need to blah, 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 blah. And yeah,
there is a process that it's so painful that there's a process that's coming up trying to find anything that would stop that, you know, because exactly. It's so painful. Yes. And we are programmed to look for pleasure, and this is painful. So this should stop when we actually need yeah. to carry on.
That's the key. To pass through that discomfort and to sit with it, to sit yes. with that discomfort and to be okay with it and create a new relationship to it, opens I think you use this metaphor, opens a new door that people can't see. But you know, I think as you said, our society, people, we have learned to avoid discomfort at all costs, and so this cannot be seen.
Yes, so absolutely. That's why I think it's almost like we have been programmed, as you say, we're entrained to look for happiness and to pleasure everywhere. So we have no idea how to deal with pain, disappointment, fear, absolutely not trained. We can put it aside. I can do this very well. But I actually had to learn how to deal with that.
That's actually very good framing. I like that. I might.
Thank you. You can use it in your next book.
Well, I'm thinking more. I mean, usually when we talk, I walk away with like some marketing ideas. So, you know, one thing that I'm not necessarily good at is somebody says to me, what is your book about? What do you talk about? Or whatever it is. It's very hard for me to have like a one or two lines to try to cut through maybe their preconception and give them a good explanation. This is the core is about this. So I've had very many different ones over the years, but I like this idea of, well, you know, it's training on dealing with discomfort and disappointment. Ultimately yeah. is what it is. You know, that's one bullet point in talking points about what this is all about, at least of the initial stages.
Yes, because we don't want to scare all the listeners. There is a peace and contentment on the back of it, if we're able to see that, or at the end of it. So when this is processed, which is, I think, by far the hardest part of it, when this is processed, we realize that what can be processed is not us. So we are going step by step to what we are in reality, this observer, this presence. And when we remove all the layers of pains and fears and hurt and everything that dissolves in the presence, then it's pretty good. But you don't, as you said, you don't sit down and find that right away. what comes at the surface is usually the hardest part first. So we have to deal with our, what I call patterns, but probably the hardest pattern to start with, almost like you put yourself off. But we reach a stage where we can be completely at peace. I'm not saying that works each time. That would be a lie. But sometimes it can happen, and it's wonderful as well. But your book is really to prepare ourselves for that, to do the work that will allow us to do that at the end. At least that's how I understand it.
The approach that I try to take is to not sell the end, is to not even talk too much about it, because what that end is unclear. It's highly individual per yes. person. What does it look like after 10 years of doing this for each individual person? The only thing I know is me.
Absolutely. And that's the kind of experience we are interested. Now that you've done the work, now that you sit with it, like I just for the listener, they know that actually this is the title of your book. And of course, I will put that in the description below. But now that you have done the groundwork, what is your experience of sitting with you?
To be honest, the actual sitting experience itself is not any better than it was at first. I was talking to somebody recently who told me that this, what I'm about to say, was a big relief to them. I avoid sitting just as much as I did now as before. To sit for 15, 30 minutes, like I could do it. I could sit for 2 hours now, you know. But to get me to do it, to get me to sit for those 2 hours, like to make that decision, I'm going to stop what I'm doing and sit, is still a challenge. And that just shows you how much of this, as you say, programming or this internal incentivizing to keep acting in the world, how deeply ingrained that is into like our nervous system, you know, that it's still a decision that needs to be made to stop.
Yes, but when you actually succeed to sit down, and especially when it lasts 2 hours, because 2 hours is quite a long time, what's happening inside you for those 2 hours? I'm curious. I never did 2 hours.
I've done a few. I can't say I've done a lot, but I've done a few of these retreat type things where you do a full day. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's definitely, there's a challenge there. There's a physical challenge to it as well, you know, just purely like from sitting down. And more or less what I've found is it repeats in almost cycles. So it's probably related to somehow like circadian rhythms in the body and things like this, like hormonal, like ups and downs. So there's this initial kind of period of time where, yes, there's discomfort and there are thoughts that keep kind of pummeling you with ideas and things like this. I would say somewhere around the 15 minute mark to 18 minute mark, I started experiencing a shift into another mode. The thoughts slow down a bit. Mm-hmm. I would say they never quite go away for me, but they just stop taking as much attention. And I start fully feeling my body much more embodied than before. It's almost like my body. And then, yeah, so for around this time to the end, actually, to the end of the sitting, whether it's 30 minutes or 45 or an hour or two, the body seems to be like, it almost seems to be like more and more of a shell where it starts getting tighter, like not tighter, stiller and in a certain sense rigid, but I'm not doing it. It feels more and more like, yeah, it feels just more and more like a casing almost.
Wow.
Like a sensory, like I can feel the body is like, I can feel the senses around it and in it, but it feels like a casing, like something you put in, like a box that I've been put into, something like this.
Yes.
And then usually what really surprised me starting maybe around 6 years ago was that I started seeing lights, and that was also very unique. So there's the purple light. Is my little friend shows up somewhere around like 18, 19, 20 minutes. And it's this little purple light, and it just kind of comes in, and it's very
beautiful.
Bright and luminous.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it fades, comes back, but usually for for there for certain periods of the sitting. Over time, then there was these like bright white flickering lights. Wow. on the top right eye, kind of flickering this way, and that's usually my pattern where I know, okay, I'm gonna really enter a mode now, you know. Because it's like a little strobe show. So what's interesting to me is when I go to these Hindu temples, and you see, often they use strobe lights, especially I think there are some areas, I think it's the south of India, where the particular forms of worship there include these like what we would think are very gaudy, you know, kind of tacky like lights. Like at least from the American point of view, you're like, what is this? And there's just like Christmas lights and like strobe lights like this over the statues that just blink.
Wow, and I didn't know that. It's amazing. I feel less bad about all the years I spend in the nightclubs now.
Yes. Well, this is okay. This is a digression, but I have come to think that a lot of what people do to party, have fun, a lot of things that happened in life that seem very disconnected to any of this, what you could call spiritual change or any of these experiences, are actually people trying to connect to it.
I totally agree with you. I think it's even worse than that. Everything we do in physics, in science, in everything, we try at a human level to reproduce what we can easily get to. I mean, not easily, but we can, harshly. Succeed to do when you go inward, but it's really we are all perceiving the same thing, but not necessarily all aware that we are perceiving it. So when we are unaware that that's what we actually going after, we tend to use all those paths and stuff and try to reproduce what we can get inside.
I've seen that, and I've come to that conclusion myself in many respects. But I don't want to in any way put too much importance on anything that I just said about lights or feelings or what I'm about to say, which because I really want to answer your question of what happens. I will tell you, but I don't want in any way to put too much importance, because that's not very important.
Okay.
It's not that important. What is important is one sits every day quietly without distractions and does and finds out for themselves. That's the key, most important
thing. Yes.
Nobody else's story should matter almost in any way to you. Like, and it sounds antithetical to even having podcasts or writing books, but we do share information with each other, and I think it's helpful to an extent. But we cannot, in some way, think, "All right, well, I heard this guy on a podcast say he saw lights, so I'm going to sit down and try to see lights." This is not
what we're looking for. Actually, I'm glad you share this experience with me, because I have a very different experience when I meditate for a long time. And I think the maximum I've done is probably an hour. And for something really strange, it happens really in the middle of the night. So the best meditation, and by best, I mean when I was quieter, my mind, I could be still, was really in the middle of the night, would say between 3:40 to 4:40, which is awkward. But that's the best time for me. And when you say you're almost felt like your body was caging yourself, I actually experienced the contrary of my body dissolving. And for a very long time, everything was dissolving. And I was everywhere, like this unlimited presence. And I think what you share with me just confirm that whatever experience with that, it's not relevant. It's what we need to experience for ourselves, for our own growth and healing.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily the truth for everybody. But the truth of what we find is who we are and why we are here. And that is, I think, this presence that we find is common to everybody. But the way the quality, the intrinsic presence is the same for everybody, but the way we experience it is like almost an infinite possibility.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think it's just so highly individual. It's just so highly personal. And I think that's what
Yeah, sorry, but I think it's very important you share that, because if I'm on a podcast and I share my experience and I came to the point where I say, yeah, but if it's different for someone else, if it's not relevant, then I need to bring people to share their own experience. And one of the listeners say, yeah, I actually never felt the space, but I can relate with this light. And it's kind of comforting. You're not the only one. And we are in this together, maybe different experience, but we are in this all together.
Yeah, I think where it becomes more helpful is around the subject of shame, and in a sense, people kind of coming out of the closet with their experiences. You know, I think we all pretend and we go through life playing these social roles in the world, and we're kind of playing characters, and our characters and the game we're playing is very restricted. The conversation is very restricted to a particular point of view and topics and frameworks. But all of us, every single one of us, has had experiences, and we have them every night with dreams that we cannot explain. We don't understand. I mean, you know, just a thought itself. Who's thinking? Where does a thought, if you're sitting here and you're having your coffee and suddenly something comes to your mind, says you've got an appointment at 11. What was that? Who was that?
Yes.
What was that? Right. And so even just something so small that we take for granted every day is an experience of something odd. So when we talk about these things, at minimum, so on one hand, we risk people trying to chase after experiences. But on the other hand, you make it okay to say, you know what, there actually is something else going on here. So I have a friend of mine who, you know, he's struggling in many respects through just trying to live, you know. I think that's probably the best way to put it. He's in a safe place, has a good job, he's married, you know, in many respects, he has a good life, but nothing makes sense. Just total caught up in cynicism and skepticism, and he has no relationship to what you would call being.
Yes.
What I'd say to him and people like him is, okay, I know that you don't have a directive experience that you are aware of right now of this other stuff. But let me tell you, there is another way. There is another way of living. There is another experience there to be had.
When you accept the shame to look a little bit like you lost it, you know, you became crazy. When you accept, and I can relate with your friend's story, because I had literally everything you could dream of, but I kept being unhappy and unhappy, and I was upset that honestly I've ticked all the boxes you could possibly imagine. I had no problem whatsoever, but I wasn't happy. And the closest form of happiness, even though I'm not keen on the word, so the truth is I haven't found happiness, but I found contentment. Like, you're enough, we are enough, but only at the level of the present. So when we are going out there trying to fill this hole that we feel, like emptiness of our life and meaningless, as you said, the only thing that can start to give an answer is the presence within, the observer within, for sure. I mean, I haven't found any other way for now, but if I do, I'll make sure everybody on the podcast knows about it.
Something that has become clear to me is that call that you're talking about, that unhappiness, no matter what's happening in the physical kind of world around you, for me, that is the call of life. That life is calling you, and you can use different paradigms to explain what that is. You can call it God. You can call it the divine. You can call it Tao, you can call it the Atman, whatever you want to call it. You're being called, and that discomfort is a message to bring you back to the fold and bring you back in, because it's almost like we are, our bodies are on the exterior of a sphere. We're on the exterior of a sphere in this kind of physical encasing. And there's this thing in the middle of the sphere that is calling our awareness back in, but we, our awareness is so caught up in the exterior casing, in the body casing. And every once in a while you get a peek in. And but over time, if you sit and you do these stillness practices, you move closer and closer to the center of the sphere.
Yes.
And so when I see somebody, like, it was also myself, my friend, and what you described as how you were before, these are just folks who are on the outside of that sphere.
Yes.
And they don't have a way in.
Yes.
And they don't have a conceptual framework to allow themselves to go in.
Yeah, there is a path.
It's silly.
Yeah, there is a path, yeah. And you describe it in your book. And also, now I think you call yourself an inner wisdom consultant. And that's yeah. The way, if I understand it, and please, I would like you to share what you mean by that. But is that to help people to find the path back inner, that circle, that sphere that you're describing, right?
Yeah, that's the idea. I mean, I think I might have shared this with you before. You know, I don't want to do this. This is not something I want to do.
Totally relate to that, because I fought it for years, because the word I had in mind, the vision I had, it was a coach. I literally say to God, or if you call it consciousness, whatever, but I, for some reason, God works well with me, even though I'm not religious person, but I asked him anything, give me anything else but that, you know, anything, yeah. I'll take it, but he didn't, so I'm now I'm giving it a try. But I completely understand when you say you would rather do something else.
Yeah, I think I came to this inner wisdom consultant because the idea is like similar to like a business consultant, somebody who comes into your business and they don't run your business. They don't exactly tell you what to do. Your decisions are your own. But they are somebody who has maybe gone through this or have a certain understanding of the situation that one is in and can give some advice or pointing the finger in a certain direction. So I'm not wise, but I am in touch with wisdom. If that makes any sense. Like,
yes.
Like if you think of it like a radio receiver or your Wi-Fi receiver on your phone, you can tap into wisdom.
Yes.
And wisdom is this kind of like this platonic ideal. It just kind of exists. And you can tap into it like a receiver. So what my role can be is, okay, I have tapped in. Let me talk to you about how you can tap in.
Well, you definitely tapped into that connection for sure. You're aware of it. And I'm really glad you came to share that experience with us. Thank you so much. Thank you, Xavier.
Thank you for giving me space to talk about it.
You're welcome. And I hope you will come back, because we haven't covered all the subjects, you know.
I can talk about this forever. So in any
Well,
time,
you're at the right place, then.
I appreciate the invitation and I'll accept any time.
Thank you very much. This series come to an end. Next Friday, the Inwarders will publish a new story. So stay with us by following the podcast. Please follow, share, like, comment. You can email us at either iamican.com or theinwarders.com. I will put all the links about Xavier in the notes below the podcast. Don't forget to check out. Thank you for listening and talk to you soon. Bye-bye.